This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking.
It's Monday, the 31st of March. This is your BizNews briefing. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. The Government of National Unity has been hard at the negotiating table over the weekend, and that is over the South African budget. I thought it fitting to bring you some views on the Democratic Alliance's power within the construct of the Government of National Unity, starting with a conversation that Russell Lamberti, the chief economist and executive director at Saka Liga, had with political scientist Dr. Frans Cronier. Let's take a listen.
What is the leverage of the DA and other minority partners in this in this coalition?
Yeah, I take it that a lot of people that would watch this, to a certain extent, are in this end of history common ground. As I said very often in my work, I understand where it comes from. So the leverage can be quite shocking, and that is that the junior partners are not guests in the government. They haven't been invited to someone else's house. And if it doesn't go well, they leave. You know, they'll go away again, which is to some degree some of the thinking in amongst those junior partners. Partners have the ability to call a motion of no confidence in Mr. Ramaphosa and his government. Mm. If they call that, that motion will succeed because the EFF and MK and so on will see to it. And Mr. Ramaphosa will be forced to resign, and as will his government. And that will likely be the end of his political career and the end of the career of the people around them and everything that that entails. The ANC will have to put together a new leadership, and then after that a new government could be built. Could be a minority ANC government, could be a minority a DA government. Could be the new ANC and the DA getting together on different terms, understanding that they have power. This would certainly motivate the behaviour of and the actions that the DA's ANC partner and the government would take now. But the bet is that this cannot happen, and the DA would not do it. It is the case study of how you bring hard power forward fast to force deterrence.
Yeah.
But it requires a mindset that says we aren't guests in the government. We might not have as many votes as the other guys have, but we can bring the whole thing down and build something.
But it also wouldn't be a credible threat, given if you keep saying that if this thing falls apart, we get something called the Doomsday Coalition.
Well, now you run into an internal contradiction. Brilliant on the campaign trail, very effective at holding DA voters, is the idea that if we do not do this, doomsday will follow. And that's not entirely without merit. I think at the moment of the GNU, I strongly advised the DA to go into the GNU. I thought it was a dangerous moment. I think if at that moment MK and the EFF had found their way back to the ANC, the consequences could have been very serious. They could have turned on the printing presses to create inflation and populist desperation. And in that moment, you actually have to take a decision. And I think the decision that was taken was on both the ANC and the DA side was ultimately the correct one, and back in that situation, I'd offer the same advice, regardless of what's happened subsequently. But the point you make, and your colleague Piet le Roux make, to me, which I've used subsequently, is that the doomsday thing doesn't work terribly well past the election date, because it's essentially, what is it, doomsday? Mm. It's a spectrum of things. It's not clearly defined.
Mm.
So the your opponent in the government, your partner opponent, can push you to the nth degree.
Mm.
They can push you probably past the horrors of Gaza. And you could say, well, if we leave the government, there'll be doomsday.
Yeah.
And therefore, you better leave us in. And I think the ANC, being very shrewd at this stuff, have understood that they could exploit the doomsday concept to push the DA to any degree. And the DA, by its own reason for being in the government, couldn't motivate to its supporters why it could possibly leave. And as a consequence of that, they disabled the key piece of hard power that they had with which to establish deterrence inside the administration. And if you find this alarming, brinkmanship and so on, it's not. Because the consequences of two partners in the South African government, both essentially buying into policies that keep the fixed investment rate at 15% and growth at 1%, will in the fullness of time bring about great difficulties and problems for the country. It is not sustainable to be a society in which 30% of people don't have a job and the growth rate is 1%. And Moleti Mbeki, in a clip I was sent, he must have said it recently, said a thing that I thought was quite true. He said the tragedy, in a sense, of the GNU is that the ANC and the DA turn out not to have a great deal in common. And therefore, there is no agent within the government able to spur the reforms necessary to hike the investment rate as a precursor to the growth rate in order to get the jobs that will ensure South Africa's long-term stability. So it's not actually good enough to say, stop being critical of us, because if we pull out of what we're doing, we will have doomsday. Mm. We're past that now. Mm. Define doomsday and what it is, and let's therefore on the merits decide whether that is valid or not. But I have no doubt that if the country continues in a government that, you know, it can be quite sort of nice in the sort of cabinet circle, you travel around the world, you sort of wined and dined and red carpeted. You are not evading the doomsday risk if the consequence of your coalition is to sustain the same economic growth rate trajectory that the country was on before the ANC lost an election.
I also caught up with Davi Ritt, chief economist at the Efficient Group. He says that politicking and grandstanding is what politicians do, so expect more of it. But he did go further to say that he does not believe that the Democratic Alliance and minority parties within the GNU will allow for a VAT increase to be effected.
We all know that politicians like high drama, and that's exactly what we're seeing now. They are threatening one another that this is going to be the end of the so-called government of national unity, unless the other side comes over to whatever the political parties demand. I think it is the main thing here, the main sticking point here has to do with the increase in value-added tax, which is actually not a big thing, because we're talking about an increase in taxes of about 10 billion rand, which is really not that much. But it's become a principal thing to the Democratic Alliance and to many other political parties as well. So I don't think that the ANC has got much of a choice but to drop this proposed increase in value-added tax, which is not really going to make that much of a difference, to be honest. I don't think that the DA will accept the budget with an increase in value-added tax, because so far the DA did actually quite well compared to the previous couple of weeks in opposing the ANC in various policy issues. So I don't think that the DA can actually commit to an increase in value-added tax, and I don't think any of the other political parties will also, enough of the other political parties will actually accept an increase in value-added tax. That means inevitably that the ANC will be left with a lot of air on their faces, which is a good thing, because the ANC must understand that they are in a so-called government of national unity, and they have to give in to some of the demands of the other political parties as well. So, no, I don't think this is going to be the end of the GNU. I think it will continue. This is just normal political grandstanding, like politicians like to do anyway. But I do think that the government of national unity will not see the full period out. And the reason why I say so is because the DA needs to establish its own brand, to make it very clear to the electorate that they are a different political party. And up to now, the DA, the impression at least was created that the ANC kind of swallowed the DA the last couple of weeks. And of course, the budget and the disagreement on the budget turned things around a little bit. But I do think it will be a good idea for the DA to leave the government of national unity, say a year or so before the next general election, just to make sure that their brand is well established outside of the government of national unity. And that's not a bad idea to do that, because even if the ANC then forms a coalition with some of the other silly parties to the left, then they won't have enough time to really cause too much damage to the economy. So that's my prediction, that the GNU will survive this little spat that they have currently, but it won't see the full period running. So, yeah. A lot of fun, but a lot of political grandstanding as well.
Staying with politics, Alec Hogg, founder of BizNews, spoke to political analyst Moletsi Mbeki at the BizNews Conference 7 in Hermanus, which took place between the 10th and the 14th of March. And in that conversation, Mbeki stressed that there is no alternative to the government of national unity. Let's take a listen.
Well, there is no alternative to the government of national unity. In real terms, the ANC and EFF won't work together. That's why the EFF broke away from the ANC. The MK party won't work together with the ANC. So in reality, the DA has a huge amount of power over the in the government of national unity because there is no alternative. Many people like to imagine that there was an alternative of an ANC, EFF, ANC, MK party. There isn't such a... Jacob Zuma hates the ANC leadership. They are the ones who removed him as president of South Africa. Malema hates the ANC leadership. They removed him as president of the ANC Youth League. So they can never work together. So that is the reality of our situation, which we are sitting with.
Until the next ANC leadership elective conference, where the man who's coming here tomorrow, Paul Mashatile, and I'm going to ask him this question because we've heard it repeated many times, and there's a belief that were he to be the president of the ANC, he would coalesce with the MK and the EFF.
Well, I don't know what Paul will say. First, I don't know if he will be president of the ANC. I doubt he doesn't know either. And secondly, even if already the ANC is sitting at 32% in the latest opinion poll, so if he teams up with the MK party, that won't give him 51%. So the reality is the ANC is on its way out. The real question is, what is the DA, which is a critical player in the politics of the country? How is it using the space that we have between now and 2027, when the ANC has a new president, and then between now and 2029? What is it going to do to get to 51%?
So if I read you correctly, it's almost like the DA is not using the muscle, or maybe does not understand what muscle it has in the government of national unity.
Well, in front of a leader of the DA, I've been reluctant to agree with you, but I think...
No, I'll ask the question.
I agree with you that the DA has a lot of muscle in the government of national unity. Okay, it used it over the budget the last time on February the 19th. So I think it is learning that it does have a lot of muscle. So hopefully we'll see it using that muscle in more areas as well.
Another news clip that has been doing the rounds this weekend is that of former South African President Thabo Mbeki commenting on the Ibrahim Rasool furore.
Ibrahim Rasool is an old friend and comrade of mine. But I think in this instance he made a mistake. He said things about his host president, which he should not have said. When I saw this and I saw this personal non grata, I wasn't surprised. Because it means practically you make an assessment of your host president, which is negative. And you want to sit with that president tomorrow. They won't agree. This is your view of me. Now you want to come and sit and talk serious matters with me? No. I was very glad when he landed in Cape Town, Ibrahim, when he's talking to people, that he was insisting that whatever might have happened in his case, it was critically important that South Africa must understand that it needs good relations with the United States was correct. So his proficiency as a diplomat, and fortunately our school here, run by Department of International Relations, prepares these appointees. 4 months you sit there and you get prepared how to be a good diplomat. So that even if you are a political appointee, that particular process of proficiency is a matter that is dealt with. It ought not, this particular incident, it should not serve as an obstacle to any process that we need towards restoring good relations with the United States. I think I'm quite sure that Ibrahim Rasool himself would recognize this, that as a diplomat, you don't represent yourself. You can't say this is my personal opinion. I'm speaking in my private capacity. There's no private capacity.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At SunExchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Shifting gear to business, Alec Hogg hosted a webinar with Standard Bank's Shift platform and the head of the platform, Glyn Allen, who spoke to the new innovations within the online currency and trading platform. The most recent move has been to add South African listed shares. Let's drop into the conversation.
It's been quite a momentous task, Alec. I think we often underestimate, sometimes it's not just the technical build that needs to be tested and tested, like you mentioned, but it's also a lot of the regulatory and compliance and safety and security procedures that I think end up taking the longest. So it's been a long journey, probably a couple of years now in the making, and it's not as simple as just putting it on an app. There's a lot of work to kind of try and optimize and make it as cost efficient for both us and our customers as possible.
Well, I'm going to just take us into the BizNews portfolio. And the reason I'm doing that is I want to just show everybody how we've structured the portfolio, the exponential portfolio, what we used to call the shift portfolio, in a way so that we've been ready for this. So just having a look on the screen, just to make sure, can you see everything on the screen, Glyn?
I can. Thank you.
You can. Brilliant. All right. So as you'll see there, our biggest holding is in the research affiliates deletions ETF. We know all about that one. Hasn't done great yet, but not a problem. But what we've decided, what we've done is we've got there an iShares South Africa ETF. Well, look, the idea was up until now, we could only invest offshore. We couldn't invest on the JSE. So what you're going to be doing today is switching some of those investments onto the JSE because of what Glyn's just told us a moment ago. But you can see there's the iShares South Africa ETF, which is 9% of the portfolio. We've got Prosus, which we invested in the euros, 9% of the portfolio. You go a little bit further down. We're going to be changing those Anglo-Americans, which are in pounds, into rands as well. And similarly with Lesaka, which is 4% of the portfolio. So, and then we've built up a little bit of cash. We've got 8% of cash. So we've got all of that that we are going to be doing quite a bit of trading, I suppose you could call it. We don't really trade much, but this is a one-off opportunity. Glyn, how many of the JSE-listed counters are now available on Shift?
So we haven't put absolutely everything that's available on JSE, as you've alluded to, Alec. We kind of have started what we think have been the most popular, you know, in our sort of older environment in online share trading. So we're currently sitting on around 128 instruments, and it's pretty even split between single stocks and ETFs at this stage. But as you know, the BizNews tribe in particular often asks for additional counters. And in that case, we'll obviously absolutely add that if it's necessary.
That full webinar with Shifts, Glenn Allen and Alec Hogg is available on BizNews TV on the YouTube platform. Now, Pick and Pay has decided to go ahead and put their brand on the back of the Springbok rugby jersey. Here's Sean Summers, the CEO of Pick and Pay, talking to the rationale for this brave advertising move.
It was a process that's been going on for quite a while. In our clothing division, we've enjoyed really fantastic sales of the Springbok clothing apparel over quite a protracted period of time now, specifically the last World Cup, fantastic success. So we were in discussion with Saru about the rights that go with tying that up. And that conversation continued to evolve. And, you know, specifically for us in Pick and Pay, if we look where we are at the moment, the journey that we're on, we're really trying to restore Pick and Pay back to its former glory again. The truth is that there is really only one thing that really unifies and unites everybody and everything in South Africa, and that is the Springboks. So we could think of nothing that could be more appropriate to really sort of put our pride and our stake in the ground for Pick and Pay. And the fact that Pick and Pay is going nowhere but coming back again and going forward and moving up and starting a similar sort of journey that the Springboks commenced. You know, they're sort of 5-8 years ago when they pulled themselves out of the doldrums.
On the international front, President Trump has said that buyers of Russian fuel may have to brace themselves for secondary tariffs. This as Putin continues to refuse a ceasefire with Ukraine. Our Bloomberg colleagues have all the detail.
President Trump there speaking to reporters about Russian President Vladimir Putin and his threat of secondary tariffs on buyers of Russian oil. For more, let's bring Bloomberg senior editor Derek Wallbank. And Derek, it's been a remarkable sort of couple of conversations that we've heard from President Trump, namely in that NBC interview where I think we've had sort of some of the most fiery language yet that we've heard from the president against Russia.
Yeah, I think that's right, Heidi. And look, you know, Donald Trump has been very clear that he wants a deal made between Ukraine and Russia, and he wants a deal for peace, and he wants the fighting to stop now. Now, he's taken a certain amount of flack, particularly from the left, particularly from Europe, particularly from some voices in Ukraine, about how close he has come to Russia in pursuit of this goal. But make no mistake, there is a line there somewhere, at which point Russia has to stop a lot of what it was doing or what has been doing somewhat relentlessly. Now, if you take some of those arguments from those sides and extend them through, what happens in a certain amount of time, only Donald Trump knows how much time, but in a certain amount of time, if Russia doesn't actually go forward? And that's one of the things that Trump is starting to lay down a marker on, to suggest that he won't be able to continue unceasingly with allowing Russia to sort of go on and continue without actually coming to a point that it stops aggressions. At the same point, he also mentioned a little bit later in that conversation with reporters aboard Air Force One that he needs to make sure that Zelensky isn't coming out of the mineral resources deal that Trump very much wants to get on there. Had some harsh statements there, too, if Zelensky were to pull out of that. So it's very much a fluid situation. Trump is saying something like, I'd like to not have to put more sanctions on Russia. But he's very much trying to make clear that he is willing to do so if he doesn't think that Russia at some point in the future, if he comes to the belief that Russia is not playing straight on.
That brings us to the end of this BizNews briefing. Alec Hogg will be back in the hot seat tomorrow with all the global and local context. Thanks as always for watching.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.